I always wanted to write a paper which has a single word as the title, because I think this must be a cool paper. I guess this is the closest I can get. I don't know, meta reduction, is that one word or two words?
Two words.
What is it?
Two, sorry,
words. Two? Okay. Okay. Meta reductions. So, meta reductions are a technique to prove that certain reductions cannot exist. And very often, when I speak to people, they tell me that, oh, I don't really understand these meta reductions. And the purpose of the talk is maybe to give you some insight how they work and how they cannot work. And I'll jump right into it. So this is the typical situation we have in crypto, right? We have a scheme. In this talk, I will always talk about signature schemes for sake of concreteness. You can take any scheme which you like. So you have a scheme, you have an adversary which gets a public key, then can make some signature requests, and then outputs a forgery. So this is the classical unforgeability notion which we have. And if you want to prove a scheme to be secure, what we do is we build a reduction, right, which typically simulates the steps of the scheme. So in this example, it takes black box, it makes black box use of the adversary, and then breaks some other cryptographic assumption. A cryptographic assumption can be something very general. Actually, these are the falsifiable assumptions, or falsifiable assumptions or gains from Mooney, from his invited talk at Crypto. Okay, and what you get is the security and property that if you have an adversary which breaks the scheme, then the reduction with black box access to the adversary breaks the cryptographic game. Think of this as the discrete log assumption, or it can be some more interactive assumption. Okay, and now here are meta reductions. And I have to say, so they were, in some papers they were coined a reduction against a reduction, which I think describes them pretty accurately. The first trace of meta reduction can be found in a paper by Bonnet and Venkatesan, as far as I know. So if someone wants to claim origin of the idea of meta reductions or the term meta reductions, please let me know. Because I think this is what people now cite, but I'm not 100% sure that the idea hasn't been around earlier. Okay, and what you simply do is the meta reduction takes the role of the adversary, and now, just as the reduction before used the adversary as a black box to break the game, now the meta reduction uses the reduction to also break the game, right? You can think of this as a big algorithm now. And what you had is, if you assume that someone has given you a black box reduction, and then you need also the assumption that there is a successful adversary, because if there's none, then the trivial reduction which doesn't do anything would work as well, right? Reduction says, if I have a successful adversary, I can turn it into an adversary or breaking game C. If there's no adversary, then any reduction would work. So you also need the assumption that you have at least one successful adversary for the meta reduction technique to work. And then what you get is this big box breaks the game C directly. The adversary disappears, and you have an algorithm which breaks, for example, discrete log. And vice versa, if you assume that there is a successful adversary, it means that if you show a meta reduction, there cannot be a black box reduction, if the game is really hard.
So the point is that M is efficient and A is not. I mean, A is an oracle and M has to be efficient. Right?
It can be. I'll get to that. It need not be, but it usually is. Okay. And actually, how to build meta reductions from a very high-level point of view is not that hard to understand. And I'll do that in the first part of the talk. And then we'll briefly talk about meta reductions are a technique to show that certain reductions, black box reductions, cannot exist. So in that sense, they fall into this category of black box separations. And how they fit in, I'll briefly go over that. And then I'll show you that it's not that easy to build meta reductions, actually, by giving you an example where things go wrong. And it's very instructive why it goes wrong. And I think it really points to the important aspect where the problem in designing meta reduction lies. And then I have, of course, also a positive example, which I think it's hard to really find an easy example which you can explain in this setting. But I hope I'll manage to convince you that this is interesting and can be used. Okay, from a bird's eye view. So this is the picture you should have in mind, the meta reduction, black box access to the reduction. And the first thing we need to take care of is the assumption that there exists a successful adversary. But this is not that hard, right? Just take an all-powerful adversary. Just coming back to Yevgeny's question. Give exponential running time. And what the adversary now can do is simply compute a secret key from the public key. Remember, we're talking about signature schemes only. Can compute a secret key from the public key. Then it makes some signature queries, which seems to be strange because we already have the secret key. But this is actually necessary to later build the meta reduction. And then it simply uses the computed secret key to forge a signature. Okay? The adversary may not be efficiently implementable. Usually it isn't, right? Because it uses exponential time to search for the key. But the reduction should still work for such adversary because it only takes black box access to the adversary. So basically the running time, if I ask something, is like a single step. And the reduction itself is then still efficient. Okay, so we're now given a successful adversary. So now we have to design the meta reduction. And what you want to do is you want to replace this all-powerful adversary by an algorithm M, which runs in polynomial time, typically, right? Because you want to break the cryptographic game like this gridlock in reasonable time. And the power or the advantage which the meta reduction has is that it can reset the reduction. Right? This is very similar to zero knowledge. Right, what's the advantage of the simulator versus the actual prover? The simulator doesn't have to witness or doesn't know the secret, but it can reset the verifier. And this is the same here, right? You can take advantage of the fact that you can reset the reduction here. You have black box access to it, you can reset it and ask again. Okay, but then there are the first problems show up. And this is something like, this is not the first problem. So this is what you do for signature schemes, right? So this is now the setting. You get the public key from the reduction. The adversary can make signature requests. You're going to do that too as a meta reduction. But at some point, you're going to rewind. And you get another signature. And then you just use the signature as a forgery here to return it to the reduction. It's not that easy, you can imagine. But this is the basic structure, how things work. It's related to the paradox, yeah. Yeah, I think I should. Sorry about that. Okay. So, and here are the first problems. We may run into the nested rewinding problem, which is known from zero knowledge. Okay, remember, I'm resetting, me as the meta reduction, I'm resetting the reduction. But the reduction itself may also want to reset the adversary. It may run many copies of the adversary. Then we run into the usual problems of having an exponential blow-up in running time, because maybe the reduction rewinds somewhere where I've done something before, but then it rewinds me, so I need to redo that from scratch, and so on. So this is one of the problems we need to take care of. And then there's the interference between resets, right? If you reset something here, and in between the resets, the reduction has made a query to the game, it means we're going to reset the reduction. The reduction is going to make another query to the game. But you cannot reset the outer game, of course. Right? So this is the other point we need to take care of. And actually, this problem with the interference between the communication between the reduction and the game and the resets also prevents you from falling into some trivial solutions. Think about that. We have a scheme. We want to show it's secure based on the security of the scheme itself. Right, we can do that. And then there's a simple reduction. The reduction takes whatever it gets from the adversary, outputs it, forwards it to the game, and then feeds the answer back to the adversary. You could do that. There is such a reduction, of course. And then we shouldn't be able to build a meta reduction. Right, because this is like saying the scheme is secure if it's secure.
Reductions are kind of a good way to get proofs or a bad way.
It is a technique.
Okay, so we're kind of focusing on the specific technique. And is it kind of a common technique? Is it a rare technique?
I'll get to that. It's becoming more common. Okay. Okay. Okay, so this This would tell us that, so this, the reduction would basically say the scheme is secure if it's secure. And how to avoid these things is very often you look at the game C and you just say it has less rounds than the actual scheme or the actual signature request you can make here. Because then you avoid these things. There's certainly you cannot build a reduction to the security of the scheme then if you have less rounds to communicate here. Okay. So if you do all this, and there's another step, which I think is the most important step, which we'll get to later. If you have all that, then you can actually conclude that the meta reduction with black box access to the reduction breaks the game C. So you can compute discrete logs. Means if you have a reduction for your signature scheme showing that you can otherwise break discrete log, if it's insecure, then you can break discrete logs immediately. Okay. So this is more the answer to, is it common, is it becoming more common? So meta reductions have been around for a while. Sometimes I think that, at least I know the first mentioning of the term meta reduction in this paper by Payet and Veno. And we have seen some more papers to come in the past years using meta reductions. I put Yevgeny's paper here because I think it is a meta reduction, even if it's not called like this. We'll see another one at this Eurocrypt next week. And the year is not over yet, so maybe we can get to see more. So it doesn't look that impressive, but I think if you look at the venues where these papers are published, this is quite interesting. Okay, let me talk about two of the results which I know best, because one I was involved in, and the other one is quite close, I think, but it tells you something how people avoided at least these two things I mentioned before. So at Eurocrypt, one of my students, Dominik Schröder, and I had a paper about impossibility of three-move blind signatures based on non-detective assumptions. Things like Schaum signature scheme based on RSA. And how did we avoid the nested rewinding problem? We just said the reduction cannot do these bad things. We had to put this in as an assumption. How did we avoid the problem of reduction to the security itself? We have a non-interactive assumption, meaning you get one challenge from the game and you have to answer. You have three moves, so you see you have less rounds. So the paper by Pass constructs, I didn't put all the, there's like special sounds also. The constant round witness hiding protocols with unique witnesses cannot be based on constant round games. Okay, again, the rewinding and complexity problem is here solved by having the protocol runs can be unbounded, of course polynomial, but the game is constant round. And that's how he resolved these problems. Okay, so why are people interested in meta reductions? Maybe sometimes it's easier than the two oracle separation technique. I'm less sure about that. But a nice property what they have is they only make typically make black box use of the adversary, but you can give them any primitive. Remember, for example, the blind signature paper we had, you could show that you cannot base it on RSA. While before, if you apply the two oracle separation techniques, typically you have the primitive as a black box and very often also the adversary. Right, so you cannot really make reasonable statements about RSA easily. Unless you switch to, for example, generic groups or something like this. Okay, this is one of the advantages of meta reductions. And again, it's a separation technique. In a sense, you can show that there is no black box reduction, unless the game is already easy. Okay, so let's go back to what we know about black box reductions. And this is a kind of commercial interlude here. There's a well-known paper by Reingold, Trevisan, and Verdan from TCC04, where they basically gave it taxonomy of black box reduction separations. They had like fully black box reductions, which was something like the adversary and the primitive are used in a black box way. And then I have a hard time always remembering. Semi was, I think, both are non-black box, but the construction is black box. And then they have the for all exists notions, which where the construction does not need to make black box use of the primitive.
So wait, when you say the primitive is used as a black box,
yeah.
There's by the construction and then there's by the adversary.
No. So typically in this on this this left hand side, the primitive is used as a black box by the reduction. And the for all existence is typically where the construction can depend on the primitive. So it doesn't only use it as a black box. Okay. But one of the things that in their notion, meta reductions do not really appear because they don't have this type of reductions where you only have black box access to the adversary. So we were not that happy. Besides the fact that I have a hard time remembering what these stand for, we tried to give a complete picture. So this is now less about meta reductions but about black box separations. We introduced something which we found useful, which we call the CAP notation. CAP means that does the construction take black box access to the primitive or non-black box? Does the reduction take the adversary as a black box or non-black box and the primitive as a black box or non-black box? So in that sense, if you talk about fully black box reductions, depends on if you want to have the for all exists or the other notion, you have a BB notion here because the reduction takes the adversary and the primitive as a black box. And if you do this, you end up with something like this. It looks complicated. It's actually, if you cut this cube, it's not that complicated because in this top layer, for example, you have the fully black box reductions. I should say that the primed versions are the ones for efficient adversaries. These do not need to be efficient. So here in this top layer, you have the fully black box reductions. And here you have the semi black box reductions. And what we kind of put in is another layer for meta reductions. Right? Because they work for black box. I mean, it depends on the construction. They can use the primitive as a black box or not. It depends on the black box access to the adversary. But the primitive is typically given in clear, right? So you can have the description. Okay. So,
One kind of global question. So some of the papers you mentioned, which seems to me another dimension, they kind of, like your paper and so on, they rule out like all non-hierarchic assumptions. So because here you put like this primitive, so you mean like a particular thing like RSA or something like that, or a particular assumption.
Yeah.
But there is this class of reductions, including some of the papers you mentioned, that whose strengths is they don't really care what, I mean, as long as it's like any non-hierarchic assumption or whatever. So where is it in your axis, this kind of advantage,
you know,
this kind of techniques, right?
This doesn't, I mean, you talk about in this black box world, you talk about primitives in general. It can be any primitive. I mean, if you're more picky and specify, or it has to be a non-interactive assumption, or an interactive one, or a constant round one, you need to specify it.
No, but here, by primitive, you usually mean traditional thing going to impellatze Rudisch, like one-way functions, one-way permutation. While I thought some of the advantages of this new techniques is that they allow rule out like all non-interactive, all constant round games, and so on.
Yeah.
So essentially, they put more constraint on the kind of on the way meta reduction works. Like the attacker cannot come up with any valid, or the reduction cannot come up with any valid query. So this is not a new taxonomy, or it's like a special case?
So your question is like two parts. So are meta reductions easier or harder in the sense that now they have to deal with non black box primitives?
I didn't talk about non-black
box. I'm not sure. So in this picture, we're not talking about any kind of assumption, right? This is about how you can use the primitive or the adversary.
So
or
primitives could be like all non-interactive assumptions, for example, right? That's what you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, in this picture, you just talk about general primitives. You define them as a kind of, function or relation. That's it. Okay, so let's do a false attempt. And I'll use Lamport's one-time signature scheme as an example. Okay, how does the scheme work? You have to mention, right away that I'm using one-way permutations because it makes things easier, but it really points to the problem which we see. It also works with any one-way function, of course. I'm well aware of this. Okay, so the signature scheme is as follows. You have a secret key. You just pick 2n random values. And the public key is you apply the one-way permutation to each of these values. And this is the your public key which you output. So you can sign one message securely. And if you get the message request for m1, mn, what you do is you publish all the left or right values from the pairs depending on the message bit, right? If the message bit is 0, you would output this one here. If the message bit is 1, you output this. If the third message bit is 1, you output this, and so on. Okay, so how does the reduction, there's a reduction showing that this is a secure one-time signature scheme. How does it work? So the reduction receives an input y, which is an image under the one-way function, and it's supposed to invert it. So how, what does it do? It just picks a random position in this set, and it just puts y into the public key at this position. Of course, it doesn't know the secret to that. That's what it's supposed to compute. Now, if you're lucky, and the adversary makes a query to the message such that it asks for the right part here, right, as in this example, you can answer. You can provide the signature. And if you're even further lucky, you can hope that the adversary in the forgery for a distinct message picks exactly this point where the message differ. And if it is able to provide a valid signature, it means it must invert y. And once you get y from the signature, you can just output it as a reduction. Okay, so what is the success probability of a reduction? The reduction works and finds a pre-image if the adversary succeeds in forging a signature after seeing one signature. If you're lucky and the query is exactly for the right bit or the wrong bit, if you like, B is the position where you put in the unknown pre-image. And if the forgery differ in exactly this, or at least in this bit. Like the first one happens with probability 1/2. The second one, given that this has happened, with probably 1/n. Because they must differ in at least one position, the forgery and the query. Okay, so what you lose is basically in the success probability is a factor of 2n. And if you like, you can think of this as one of the typical Bn reductions from the one-time unforgeability to one-way permutations, or uninvertible of one-way permutations. Okay, so let's build a meta-reduction. Let's try to build one. First, for the powerful adversary. Okay, it's very easy. It just uses its exponential power, inverts all the secrets in the public key. The one-way permutation, though, this is unique. Right, so it has the secret key. Then it asks for a signature for a random message. Again, this is not really necessary for the adversary, but then to build the meta reduction. And if the signature is valid, it just picks another message, random. You can probably condition on that this is distinct. And then you can just compute the signature, because you have the secret key. OK, here's the meta reduction. The meta reduction does the same. It requests a signature for a random message, but then it resets the reduction. And then it asks about another signature for m star. Maybe it doesn't get one immediately. Maybe it has to repeatedly reset it and ask for it. And once, then you go back to the main branch, essentially. And once you have that, you output this M star, which you got in the extraction sub-procedure as a forgery. OK? And on the average, you need 2 trials to do that, right? Because there's a probability of 1/2 that the reduction cannot answer if you pick the one where it puts the image Y. OK, so this is the picture you have, right? You get y to the reduction. You get the single signature request. And then the meta reduction resets. And then in the end, the reduction would put z to the crypto game. OK, it means we now have a successful adversary, all powerful, but it doesn't matter because our meta reduction is sufficient. We have just designed a meta reduction. We can invert the one-way permutation f. That means there cannot be a black box reduction. But we've just seen that there is a black box reduction. OK, so where do things go wrong? Distribution of queries is Yevgeny's answer. Yes. I wasn't really precise on the success probabilities. If you look at the all-powerful adversary, it always wins, right? Because it computes the secret keys and then forges a message. And it means that the reduction wins with probability 1/2n. So if you look at the meta reduction, what's happening here is it'll ask a second signature from the reduction. So it means the only way the reduction can answer this is if it's for the right bit, right? Not the position where you put in the image y. So the signature you get as a meta reduction, the forgery, which you output, also has the distinct secret bit. But the reduction depended on this bit to be the opposite. Okay? So So if you want to look at it in a more abstract way, what's happening is that you can divide the message space into the part where the reduction can provide a signature, which is half of the message space, and the part where the reduction cannot provide a signature. And what's happening is that the adversary, and there's a small subset here where the reduction hopes the forgery lands in. This is the one where the bit of the forgery differs from the actual message. And what's really happening is that for the all-powerful adversary, you can show that there's a probability of 1 over 2n that the forgery ends up here. Because the adversary is completely oblivious about where the reduction put in the image y. What's happening with the meta reduction? The meta reduction can only get a forgery, a signature, a second signature from this space here. So the probability of ending up here is zero. And the problem is that whatever the meta reduction does is kind of entangled with what the reduction does, right? Because we're using the reduction to get the second signature. And very often, I've made this mistake myself, and I've seen papers making this mistake. You have to make sure that the meta reduction's behavior is sufficiently close, ideally indistinguishable, from what the adversary which you designed does. This should even hold if you look at, you know, from the reduction's perspective, given all the internal state of the reduction. So let's see how this is done in the two works I mentioned before. What we did, we looked at blind signature protocols. In a sense, you can think of the blindness as saying, I don't tell you which message I want to have signed. So there was no way for the adversary to kind of, for the reduction to kind of change behavior. And what Paz does, he uses uniqueness of witnesses. So whatever you extract in the end something, it's the witness. It cannot be something wrong. Okay, so positive example. I should mention this is ongoing work, but I thought, where else would you present some half-baked ideas if not at a workshop? And this is again with Paul Becher and Christina Puschka. Okay, so let's look at unique signatures and tied reductions. So what are unique signatures? Unique signatures have this nice property that if you're giving a public key, even a maliciously chosen one, a message and two signatures, then you know that at most one of them verifies. Okay? And we also need that you can really, just looking at the public key, you can tell that. And the well-known example is RSA full domain hash if you have a prime exponent. Because then you know that raising to the eighth power is a permutation, for sure, for granted. Okay, so can we have a unique signature scheme which has a tight security reduction? Tight, I mean like the success probability of the reduction is at most a constant factor smaller than, at most differs by a constant factor from the success probability of the adversary. And I make some simplifications in this talk here, folks. For example, we assume that the reduction only runs a single instance of the adversary, and it does not, the communication with the interactive assumption does not depend on the data it gets, but there is a fixed schedule when the reduction talks to the crypto game. Okay, we know that for non-tied things, at least for RSA, for a general FDH, RSA? It's RSA based, right? Okay, for RSA, we cannot go beyond non-tied reduction in the sense that Yevgeny has this paper where they show if you have a fixed number of signature requests in advance, you lose this factor, n is the security parameter. Right? And the size of the key basically grows, t, which is not the case for us here. I mean, the key can be arbitrarily large. Okay, so here's how we build such an adversary. So we have our scheme, and now we build the adversary as follows. First, it takes the public key and checks if it really describes a unique signature scheme. Right? I told you that you can do that from the public key. That's what I assume. If it's not, the adversary would abort immediately. Then it'll ask for n plus r of n signatures. R of n is actually the number of rounds for the crypto game. And in each signature request, we'll just apply a random function to the transcript so far. So if you've ever worked with something like resettable security, you know that applying random functions is very helpful because it means if the reduction resets you to some state, from there, and you branch into something which is completely independent. So here it is very useful because, or maybe I should first finish the adversary. So in the end, what you do is you pick another message, again, applying a random function to the transcript so far, and then you just exhaustively search for the signature. This signature, right? It is unique. And then you output this as a forgery. Again, the adversary is all-powerful. It can do that. We're not looking at efficiency here. OK, so why is this adversary good for us in the sense of building a meta reduction? OK, here's the reduction. And the reduction, as I said, the R is the number of rounds which the crypto game can play with the reduction. So if you ever think about what a unique signature scheme does, is more or less whenever you receive a message from the adversary, you just have two options. Either you decline to give a signature, or you give the signature. There's no way you can encode something. You get like signature will start with a zero, and you know, hope that the forgery has a signature with starting with a one. It's impossible. It also means that essentially resetting the adversary doesn't help. I mean, you can just say, okay, I'm going to give you something which is bogus, and you know from the public key, you can check it yourself, it's bogus. So either you stop, or you basically tell the adversary, okay, proceed. You can reset to the beginning, right, and send a new public key, but that would kind of be the second adversary instance then, which I ruled out in this talk. Okay, so resets don't help. That's the bottom line in this setting. And here we really use the uniqueness of the signature scheme. Okay, so how do we build the meta reduction? Meta reduction does the following. Initially, it does the same as the adversary. It gets the public key. It checks if it really describes a unique signature scheme. And it will ask for n plus r of n signatures. And it will pick the mjs randomly. I mean, we're not applying really a random function. But since we know that we're not going to be reset, we can just pick it at random. There are no resets. But this is the same. And then we can do this efficiently. OK, since we know that the number of signature requests is n plus r of n, we know that there are some places in the game where the reduction answers the signature request without talking to the cryptographic game. We know that there are n places of those. OK, and these are the good rewind points for us. There we will rewind and try to get the second signature. OK, let's look at this in more detail. OK, so here we have our n rewind points. And the first time, what we do is, once we are there, we're going to extract at all costs. So we're going to run into the extraction procedure and get and ask for signatures till we get another one for another random message. But then we need to check that this is actually a good message. And what we do is we kind of check that the fraction of bad messages is small. The most constant, this was the loss in the security reduction divided by 2. And how do we do this? We just reset and keep on asking n signature requests. We know that the reduction is not talking to the crypto game at this point because the schedule is fixed. And then we just count. And if too many of those n requests are invalid, then we would discard this m star and s star. Because then we have a good reason to believe that this set is quite large, which means we are far from uniform messages. Okay, so if we have one, if we found one and we're happy, we basically can go to the end all the way. If we have discarded M star and S star in this rewind, but we're going to do that again in the second one and then in the third one. Okay, why does it work? So the problem is that how often can it happen that we discard all the message signature pairs which we have? Can happen if each bad set has a fraction of constant divided by 4 messages in there. Because then we do, by the Chernoff bound, we throw n messages, and of ending up with having more than twice this number of messages is very small. Okay, so basically it means all these message sets must have a certain size of at least constant over 4. This is what it means if we discard all messages. But then let's look at what the adversary would do in this case. If this set is quite large, in each set, I didn't mention conditional probabilities in these things, right? So if all these sets are large, it means that in each of the n rewind points, the adversary would get a bad message with this probability and would abort If you have n rewind points, this is exponentially small. So even if we discard all pairs, the adversary would do the same. I mean, or the adversary wouldn't need to provide a forgery. So that means we don't need to provide a forgery either. So it's good. We can discard those. If they're not discarded, then what we know is that the size of this bad set is quite small. And it means that what the message which we get from the extraction is sufficiently close to uniform. Remember, it's unique signatures. It's just about the message distribution. Whenever you fix the message, you have the signature. And this means there is enough probability left, so you can basically say that the meta reduction also succeeds. Okay, so the crucial point is the checking of how far are we from uniform. Let's do a sanity check. Let's see. I mean, the thing shouldn't work for Lamport's scheme for sure. And you can see where it breaks down, actually. If the number of rewind points is bounded, right, in Lamport's scheme there's just one, then it can happen that I discard the message, but the adversary may not abort, because then this term is not negligible anymore. Okay? So our result doesn't contradict Lamport's result. Where do we need that the reduction loss is tight in the sense that the loss in the success probabilities is not too large or is constant? If the loss is too large, so let's say it's 1 over 2n, then this term, again, can be constant in the sense that that we may end up with discarding all the messages we need. We would need one. But the adversary may not abort. And then there's a mismatch again between the success probabilities. All right. See Nigel's face, and he's kind of convinced, I would say. Okay, so I hope I could give you an example how you can build meta reductions, how they work, and what the problems are. Let me sum up. If you ever approach a meta reduction paper, you want to read it, or it's very likely that you should look out for these points. I mean, first, of course, it needs to work with some specific schemes. And as I said, the typical advantage which a meta reduction has over the reduction is resets. It means you need to have some interaction, like chosen message security for signatures, chosen ciphertext security for encryption, and so on. Okay, then there should be a step where they say, how can I really break the scheme? Which is actually not that hard, right? Just give the adversary a lot of power, and then you usually can break it. And then they should build a meta reduction in the paper. And then you really need to first start to look at the basic things, like how do they solve the rewinding problem? How do they make sure that the complexity is really of the game is really less than the one of the scheme? But these are usually easy. And then the biggest problem is to really show that what the meta reduction here does is close to what the adversary does, even if you have the view of the reduction. And they are, the papers I've seen so far either required some witness hiding, some kind of blindness, for example, so you can be sure that whatever you do as a meta reduction is indistinguishable from what the adversary does, or some kind of uniqueness, which is a kind of special way of using blindness or witness hiding, right? Because then everything is unique, cannot change anything. So these are really the steps which typically consist of a meta reduction. Right, but again, it's a technique, and it's not a mathematical object, and it has to follow these rules. Maybe you find some other examples.
I have a question. Are there any black box separations? So the black, I know very few black box reduction results, but all the ones I can think of have this. They're not called meta reductions, but they actually follow the structure of meta reduction. So do you have an example of someone that doesn't of a result that does, like a black box separation result that doesn't follow?
I mean, it's the way I define meta reductions, like any kind of
separation. So what I'm saying, okay, how does the black box separation go? So suppose we have a reduction that uses adversary to break the scheme.
Right.
I'm going to show that I can break the scheme without this, by myself. So,
yeah.
In some sense, you know, I'm going to use this, I'm the breaker, I'm going to use this reduction to break the scheme.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you always have like, okay, so suppose there's an adversary and then I'm going to show that this cannot be true, right? I'm breaking something. But what I'm saying is that what's underneath these points, right, the thing is about you have a crypto game which you talk to. You have a primitive which you have non-black box access to. This is typically typical for meta reductions.
Okay, so you're saying some black box reduction, if I understand correctly, you're saying some black box black box separations are, the result is weaker in the sense that they assume that there's some kind of assumption that you also only have black box access to something else, whereas here you only assume black box.
Yeah, but this is not strict. I mean, you can have meta reductions where they also take advantage of the fact that the primitive is given as a black box. Again, a meta reduction is not a precise mathematical object. It's a technique. And I can just tell you about, I don't know, maybe the 99% of the cases which I've seen which follow this kind of structure. Maybe there's someone, for example, one of Yevgeny's result uses the RSA group as a generic group, which you can think of a kind of black box access to the primitive, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that it covers, any kind of reduction, or that the meta reduction is a certain precise object, and you can say this is a meta reduction and this is not. It's a technique, right?
But just to check, I'm not sure. I haven't thought. I mean, about universality. If you look at like Simon separation or something like that, right? So then I'm trying to see. So there you build the way kind of it's portrayed. I'm trying to see if it's related. You have an oracle relative to which like collision resistant functions just don't exist, and one-way functions do. So is this a meta reduction?
I'm
not sure.
You're saying that. Okay, you're right. Okay, when you differentiate between primitive,
right?
Then.
That's
two primitives,
right?
It's not a
meta reduction. Okay. That was like my earlier point. At some point, it seems like most of these results seem to be, well, it's not true, but a lot of the results are like very general. They don't really care about they only care about number of rounds or something like that, which is kind of the advantage of this technique as opposed to more specific early separation, which kind of are very specific to one primitive. They show one exists, the other doesn't. But yeah, I agree that later results seems to be in this flavor much more than the earlier results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I think you can. I mean, in this picture, you want to have a separation as far down as possible, right? And typically, if you look at the two oracle separation technique, they are on the fully layer, on the top layer here. Right there, here. The meta reductions are one underneath.
But one thing, how universal do you think is the fact, at least in some of those, I don't know, reductions, like people assume the reduction is algebraic, or, I don't know, you cannot rewind the attacker too many times. So how common or how inherent is it to make those extra restrictions? It seems like most of the results, they seem to be more general, they maybe rule out, more assumptions. But somehow, invariably, you need to make more assumptions.
I guess that's the trade-off between. I mean, the thing about this rewinding, for example, the exponential running time or blow-up in the rewindings, then people put restrictions on the reduction. But sometimes they can also solve this by, as Rafael passed us, just saying, okay, I have an unbounded number of protocol runs I can do with you. It's a trade-off between how we solve these things. Not actually, this was my last slide, the summary.
So you have lots of time for questions.
That was great.